Good morning, Pathways. A couple of not so hypothetical questions. How many of you grew up in a church youth group? And if you didn't, there's no shame in this. I'm just asking. How many of you grew up in a church youth group, right? How many of you were like me? Maybe you couldn't express it this way at the time, but looking back at yourself then, you would accuse yourself that you had a secret belief as a child, as a teenager, that if you weren't raised in the church, no one else would believe this Bible stuff. When I was a teenager, that was incomprehensible to me, that someone who wasn't raised in the church could actually believe the Bible. And it was just so weird to me. And so when my youth pastor would talk about, you know, hey, you should share the gospel and you should tell people about who he is and the truth and the freedom of it. And I said, yeah, I believe in that, sure. And so I brought friends from other youth groups. Or the poor young woman I was dating and I just dragged her along to my youth group. And I started to wonder, looking at myself this week, this passage is kind of haunting me. I wonder how much of that remnant is still in me, is still in us. And maybe it's time to do some heart cleaning today. So I ask you a couple of, don't raise your hand on this one, this is just for you to think about. You have these are discussion questions in your app. You can take them home and meditate or journal or paint or whatever you want to do to process them, or they're also in your email for those of you watching at home. The first question is this: when did you last try to incorporate your relationship with Jesus into one of your non-Christian friendships? When's the last time? And it's not there's no one's looking at you, like this is just between you and God. And I don't care what measurement you use, like you offered to pray for the meal, or you referenced Jesus in some way, or you quoted a verse and just, you know, maybe it was accidental, maybe it was intentional, but there was something. You were, the part of you that is of Jesus was bleeding over into your friendships, was bleeding over into your life, and it just kind of came out of you. I had to think like a long way back for that. Like, how is that? I had to really search. When was the last time your personal and unique interaction with Jesus was so strong that you needed to share it with someone? Just the amazing way he met you, or this thing that you are struggling with, or there's a verse that is driving you crazy, or there was a moment of peace and clarity, a realization, something happened between you and Jesus, and it was so strong. You just had to tell someone about it. Or the last question: when did you last cry over someone you love who doesn't yet personally know Jesus? Will you pray with me? Sometimes your word, God, is just the most frustrating thing in my life. I guess maybe that's more accurately said, my will when it has friction with your will. Or my life pattern when it doesn't exactly align with how you want me to live. Or when I hear myself speak of dreams and speak of hopes and speak of vision and speak of future, and I look at the energy and I really hope that someone else will do all that stuff. And so, Father, we pray for clarity in your word in such a way that it is compelling, in such a way that it's motivating. Father, would you temper, and I ask this honestly, God, would you temper that Asian shame culture thing that I have in me that just whips me back and forth, so that the words that they hear are encouraging and uplifting and cleansing and hopeful and possible and of the future. That we not languish in our guilt, but in that we would move forward into hope and positivity and yes, this could happen. Thank you for being here with us today. In your son's name we pray. Amen. If you've been with us either in person or online, you know that we are in this Jesus Snapshot series. And we didn't actually plan it to be this thing, but there's this concept that was kind of just like hitting with us, and it became this lens that we couldn't get rid of. And it was just about like Jesus and the other. And so we started to read of the interactions that Jesus had with people, and it just seemed like this theme that kept coming back and forth. And so we started with, you know, Jesus and the demoniac and the infrastructure by which the family tried to meet the demoniac's needs and how they just kicked them out, and we have to do better as a church. And we looked at Levi and Zacchaeus and the both tax collectors and people who were despised by their community and the way that Jesus was interacting with them and at the same time looking at us and saying, this is how it's done. How come you're not doing the same thing? And so we are kind of coming into the home stretch of this series of Jesus and the other. And today, this passage has me a little freaked out. So I'm just going to walk you through what I was feeling, and maybe you can be of comfort to me. It begins with Mark chapter 4, and it begins like this. Jesus is talking in a parable. He's teaching the crowds and his disciples this parable, and it begins with this. He says, "Do you bring in a lamp to put it under a bowl or a bed? Instead, don't you just put it on its stand? For whatever is hidden is meant to be disclosed, and whatever is concealed is meant to be brought out into the open. So if anyone has ears to hear, let them hear." When I chose this passage and Eddie said, "Hey, Jonathan, what do you want to preach on?" I was like, "Oh, I was reading this passage the other day and I really want to preach on that." And I hadn't yet done a deep dive into that study, and I really wanted to preach on something that this passage doesn't say. And it's so frustrating when what I want to preach on isn't what the passage is. It's like, oh, and I had to submit myself to God and say, what is this passage saying? So let's just break it down. What is the lamp? All of a sudden, Jesus starts talking about a lamp. This parable is a familiar one to us. It's in the middle of other parables that are familiar to us. The whole chapter of Mark starts with the parable of the soils, and then there's this lamp passage. There's this weird little passage coming up, and it goes into the seeds passage, and then there's something about Jesus commanding the waves, and it's all about this sharing and receiving of the light of the gospel. And this whole chapter is just Jesus trying to teach the people, like, there's this light out, and I'm the light, and you got to talk about me. You got to have me in the world. And so the lamp is just simply this. We're just going to shortcut to the answer. The lamp is the truth of the gospel that Jesus is right now and that he offers right now a relationship with you, uniquely you, not with the church, although that's also true, but with you, uniquely you. And it's a message of forgiveness. It's a message of hope. It's a message of healing. It's a message of purpose, of significance. And if this is something you haven't accepted in a while, if this is something that is you've just never said yes to, then don't let this moment go by. Like, use that app, use the connection card, find someone and take action on whatever it is that's stirring in your soul on that. We get that. That's the easy part of this passage. But the next verse, Jesus starts talking about hidden things and the lamp. And we're like, well, if Jesus is the lamp, then why are we hiding it? That doesn't make any sense. And what is it? Well, who's hiding the lamp? Like, what is going on? All right, I want to present that in my studies to all of my academic brothers and sisters out there who have studied this passage and who have a sharp eye. In my studies, there are two interpretations of this passage. And they're not conflicting, but to be fair, one is a majority interpretation and one is a very small minority. And me being the youth pastor and being who I am, I really like the minority interpretation. But let's present the majority. So the majority interpretation is this, right? It's easy to hide. The actor in this parable, the one who has the agency to do something, is God. God is the one who brings the lamp. God is the light. God is doing all the things in this parable. The only action that we have is just to receive it or not. So in this context of God as the actor, for millennia, all of the Old Testament, all of human history, there was no Jesus revealed yet. He was hidden until the moment of his birth, and then his life, and then his death and his resurrection. And all of a sudden, the light was made clear and he was in the world and it was no longer hidden. So if God is the actor, well, then the hidden part is saying, well, now you have Jesus and now you should talk about him and share about him because the light is here. So let it shine. This all makes sense. But in this minority interpretation that has me so bothered, what if it's us who is the actor in this parable? What if it's us who's the one doing the verb things? I mean, we are, after all, invited, for those of us who follow him, who call ourselves by his name, we are invited to share in his mission. We are given the great commandment. It's not even a suggestion, it's a commandment. We must go and talk about Jesus. We must share about him. We must live in such a way that people are drawn to him. So I have all my books open and all my digital things open and I've got my notes open and I'm studying all these different authors and scholars and whatever and I'm making my notes. And there's a thing in my notes, it's in all caps, it's bold, I don't know what I was doing. I was like, I am not hiding the light! It felt like, stop accusing me, God, of just stop hammering on me, like I'm not. And then I took a moment and I recognized that there was sort of an indignant tone in my voice, and I said, okay, I'm sorry. Jesus, in what way? In what way am I hiding the light? And so I offer that to you. If you heard Jesus say to you, you're hiding your relationship with me, what would you hear? How would you hear him say that? To make it worse, it's not something we can dismiss. Because go back to the verse, he says, if anyone has ears to hear, let him hear. Right? And this is biblical code, this is New Testament phrasing for, hey, there's a spiritual truth here, and it's kind of a little shrouded, and if you don't pay attention, you're going to miss something big. So if you have ears to hear, if you have, I remember back in my high school chemistry days, if you have the cell receptors that will hear this and it will twist in and lock, if you can receive this, then hear it. And if for some reason you have hardened your heart, or if for some reason you have pushed me away, if for some reason that you are no longer, you're deaf or blind to spiritual truth, well, then you're not going to hear it. This is code for Jesus saying, this is important. This whole lamp thing is important. And just to make sure you really get it, he says it again. Consider carefully what you hear, Jesus continues. With the measure you use, it will be measured to you and even more. Whoever has will be given more. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. And this is where I started to get confused. I understand the lamp part, I understand Jesus part, and then why in the world does Jesus start talking about measure? Like, for those of us who are raised in the church, like, we hear, this is so familiar to us. Boom, 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 A, fall, B, C, this is so familiar to us. And yet, when I ask, like, wait, why does Jesus start suddenly talking about measuring? Majority interpretation. If God is the actor, and the only thing that is asked of us is to respond, and Jesus is cautioning about measuring, well, then it makes logical sense that the thing that Jesus is warning us about is measuring our response. This is even a phrase, he had a measured response. And he goes on to say, like, if you have, you'll be given more. And, well, if you don't have, well, that'll be taken away from you too. So, in other words, if my response to God is positive, if I have gauged the truth of Jesus in this world, if I've gauged his presence in my life, if his offer of salvation and forgiveness and healing is good, and if my response is positive, then it's like all of a sudden, clack, 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 all the doors start opening and I step onto this escalator and start moving faster and faster. And the positive reception to spiritual truth and wisdom and joy I have becomes even more. I get that. I want that. Except that if I have measured Jesus and I find him somewhat doubtful, and I find the things in the Word somewhat questionable and not really what I have problems with that verse, and I don't like that concept, and if my measurement of God's presence in this world is negative, it seems to say that it's going to be applied in reverse to me, and then even more acceleratedly so. And that kind of freaks me out. And it freaks me out even more so when I think about family members who I love, and friends who I love, and students who I love. And it just how seems like their no to him is reverberating, and it's so, you know, the last time you cried over someone, this is a hard passage. It's not what I thought it was. And I want to be careful. You've heard a little bit about my background, being raised inside the Chinese church, and being raised in, you know, going to my friends' Korean churches, and it just seemed to me, I know it wasn't true, but it just seemed to me, like as a kid growing up, that when I heard a powerful preacher, the result that I came away with a feeling of shame and guilt. Like, that's what meant a strong sermon to me as a kid. Like, that's how I was kind of indoctrinated. Like, if it's a strong message, then I feel really bad. And I'm so careful about, I have to work so hard that with my students that these messages don't come out the same way. And so I've worked so hard to only look at the gospel in terms of light, and I've tried to teach in a way that's hopeful and encouraging. And 5 years ago, I became a stepfather to teenagers. And then I suddenly started to realize the value of teaching about consequences. And it sort of became like, maybe I've been doing Jesus and the Bible a disservice. It feels like this is fair warning from Jesus about a consequence. And that's not even the scariest part of this passage. Again, this minority interpretation of us being the actor. Think about this for a second. Play this out with me. If we are the actor, if we have the agency to act, if there is something that we are supposed to be doing, and it is we who are supposed to be shining this light, and Jesus starts talking about hiding the light, well, then we are the ones hiding the light. And then he starts talking about measuring, and it starts to get real ugly inside my soul. Like, I start to get real nervous here. Like, what are you saying, Jesus, that I am measuring my sharing of this light? Are you saying, Jesus, that I am measuring who I find worthy to share Jesus with? Are you saying, Jesus, that I have chosen to reveal the light only among certain people in certain places and times, and that I have denied that light to others? Is that a possible interpretation of this passage? And that starts to really freak me out. We're in this series of Jesus and the Other. And you've been with us long enough to know that there is something in us. Because of the result of the fall, because we are sinful, there is a thing in us that likes to declare who is in and who is out. There's a thing in us that likes to fall into stereotypes and caricatures and exaggerations and all sorts of wrongful statements of the other person as not me. And I don't care if it's skin tone or a culture or a political stance or even a financial standing or a personality type. Like, there is something in us that likes to declare people safe and not safe, people welcome and not welcome. And it's a constant battle for us. I mean, we know it's normal, and yet it's a constant battle for us. And I think about this passage where he's saying, if you, those who have, so if we have the measurement that there is no other, then we will be given even more, and we will be seen as not other to God. I think that's true. And if we have the measure that us is us and them is them, then what we have will be taken away. And this kind of makes sense too. In a sad way, don't raise your hands, but in a sad way, how many of you know of a church that used to be that is no more? Because they had an us, them. There's a famous video clip, and I'm sure that you have seen it, but it's worth seeing again. It's Penn of the magician Penn and Teller, and I guess he's a pretty intelligent fellow, and I guess he's a pretty known atheist. And so a lot of us, our Christian brothers and sisters, I guess they appreciate him, and so a lot of times after his shows, he'll talk with everybody, and a lot of us, I guess, share the gospel with him or try to share something with him. And so after one such encounter, he had this reflection.
And it was really wonderful. I believe he knew that I was an atheist. But he was not defensive, and he looked me right in the eyes. And he was truly complimentary. It wasn't in any way, it didn't seem like empty flattery. He was really kind and nice and sane and looked me in the eyes and talked to me and then gave me this Bible. And I've always said, you know, that I don't respect people who don't proselytize. I don't respect that at all. If you believe that there's a heaven and hell and people could be going to hell or not getting eternal life or whatever, and you think that, well, it's not really worth telling them this because it would make it socially awkward. And atheists who think that people shouldn't proselytize, just leave me alone, keep your religion to yourself. How much do you have to hate somebody to not proselytize? How much do you have to hate somebody to believe that everlasting life is possible and not tell them that? I mean, if I believed, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that a truck was coming at you and you didn't believe it, that truck was bearing down on you, there's a certain point where I tackle you. And this is more important than that.
How much do you have to hate someone not to share the gospel with them? In my heart, I was just being neutral or just waiting for the right time or working really slowly at it. But this from a man who does not follow Jesus, who appreciates the love that this stranger gave to him. I want to offer you some challenges, which I hope you'll accept, because I can't do it, and I need help. I need encouragement on this journey with you. The fall is coming, right? September's coming, school's coming. The end of the pandemic distance is coming, at least for America, at least for Gaithersburg. So the challenge is this. Will you find ways to blend your church family with your non-Christian friends somehow, some way? In my mind, I think of those parties where, you know, my students would invite me to their birthday party, and they'd have all their church friends and all their school friends at the same party, because I was a bold kid that did that. Like, I'm going to invite everybody. It'll be fine. All my church friends, all my school friends. And there was like one side of the room is all the church friends, and one side of the room is all the school friends. And there was like, unless maybe like two people played on the same team together, and then like, oh, well, now they're, and then they brought the rest of us in or something. Or we need bridge builders. Like, I don't, like, invite one of us out to a meal, or let's go do an outing, or let's start a volleyball team in a non-church volleyball league, or let's do something where we are out there amongst together, doing this together. And like, we have one of my friends is a coach for his high school volleyball team, and he holds the volleyball banquets at his church, and they're just like, this is a church? This is amazing. Like, what a cool way to just interact. Like, would you help us build bridges with your friends? Because we'd want to love them too. Challenge number two. Last week at the picnic, we heard so many people say, it was so good to just be together and not have an agenda. And very quietly, they'd say, it was so good to be together and not have someone preach at us. You know, every time we get together, there's some kind of Bible study or an agenda or something we have to get through. But that picnic was just us hanging out. What about if we had gatherings that anyone would find interesting? Hey, you have a new car? We have a workshop coming up about how to maintain a car. You just got your first real job or your first real big job. You just got a huge raise. We're going to have a workshop on financial stewardship. Hey, there are some empty nesters in our group, and they want to share some lessons of how to parent early childhood. I'm like, hey, there's a poker lesson going. I don't know. That's not a good example. I have this dream of a series of workshops, like things you should know by 20, right? I was hanging out with one of, and we were like making fun of the stuff that we didn't know was coming up. I'm about to turn 50, and like, there's stuff I don't know, and someone needs to teach me these things. And how great it would be if someone who was in their 50s or in their 60s held a workshop for people like me and said, hey, this is coming up. You got to prepare for this. Or if you haven't set this up, it's going to bite you. If you do this, and just someone give me some life wisdom. Things you should know by 20, and let's have some 30 and 4-year-olds teach that. Things you should know by 30, and let's have some 40, 50. Like, let's do this. Use that connection card. If you think there's someone here, volunteer someone else. Put someone else's name in that connection card. That person would be a great person to do the things you should know by 20 or by 50 series. Like, put their names in there, and we'll contact them. It's like, all the church wants you to lead this workshop. It'll be great. But let's have some things, some gatherings, where you could bring your work friends, your school friends. Teenagers, I bet if we held a workshop on like 10 really cool things you could do on your smartphone that old people don't know about, they would probably come to that. It'd be, totally be worth a free pizza. Like, let's, like, it can be mold. It can be, there's a thing, right? If we have students in the room and old people in the room, then we're multi-generational. If we have students in the room interacting with older people and vice versa, then we are intergenerational. Right now, we are multicultural. And I know Ananda's dreaming and vision and working really hard on how to try to figure out how to make us intergenerational or intercultural. That's what I meant, intercultural. We are in this community, but are we interacting with this community? Did God mean for us to be a separate entity here, or something that was at the heartbeat of all of our communities? Challenge three, will you contribute to creating and reimagining how we as Pathways gathered? Kath is in charge of our calendar for this building and all of our events. I would love if she were overwhelmed every week, not for the sake of busyness, but because this small group was having this open thing, and this small group was having this open thing, and this group was doing this, and this group was doing that, and the connection cards of people who wanted to know more about Jesus was just overflowing because of the way that we live, because of our humility, because of our love, because of our friendship, because of our usefulness to the community. What burden will you accept from God to pursue those whose seats we have left open for too long? Some of these seats are empty because of the pandemic. Some of you are watching at home. Some of you we have never met yet, and we hope to soon someday. And some of these seats are open because we've been praying and working on friends for years, if not decades. And maybe we've left that seat open for too long. Maybe it's time to renew shining that light. What would it look like? Let's have a dream together. What would it look like if we had, I know this freaks Eddie out, so he's on vacation, so you know, sorry. What would it look like if we had an open mic testimony, an annual night of open mic testimonies, where everyone came and they just told the stories of how present God was in their life? Yesterday's story of Allison was, I mean, a giant in the way that God was working, he allowed God to work in his life. What if we just had open mic, and maybe the first year is kind of like, okay, there were a few, but not that many. Well, that's okay, we're going to do it the year after that. And there were a little bit more the next year. And by the third year and the fourth year, okay, this is way too many people. We have to like, have a whole night, like two different nights of this, three different, like the stories among us need to be told. What would it look like if we had a standard like 101, 201, 301, like small group, and they were always full of like our friends and our guests and our family members who like wanted to know the basics and then wanted to get a little bit more and then a little bit more, and that rotation of small groups and classes and experiences were always full? What would it look like if some Sundays we weren't in this room? What if some Sundays we weren't just sitting here listening to someone talk? What if we were out there doing something together as a church on a regular basis? Someone comes to the door and like, where is it? Those are the church. It's on Sunday. We have a big sign like we're out doing stuff. I went to a church once. I don't have this in my notes. It's a 30-second story, I promise. I was in some city for some kind of conference, and I was there for 2 weeks. And so I went to this small little church, and the service, it was so like experimental. It felt like it was like this interactive stations of the word, and it was just so incredibly well done. I was like, this is amazing. And so I went back the next week, and it was the lamest service I had ever been to. And I was like, what happened? And I went to the preacher afterward and was like, so like, what's the story of this church? And he apologized immediately and said, I'm so sorry. So many of us, we were together till like 3 last night. There was a birthday party for this homeless guy in our neighborhood, and so we were all there, and he just kept going on, and I kept thinking, that was service. Last night's birthday party was the service. That was the celebration of where God was at. What if we let go? What if? What would it look like if our prayer list was full of celebration stories? What would it look like if we had a dream wall of like just like concepts and ideas of things we could do, like use the connection card that I've always wanted there to be a Uno card and the gospel meeting. I've always wanted there to be a small group that was centered around food and cooking. I've always wanted there to be like, let's sing through the entire hymnal in one night. Like, I send these things in, like, what if? I've had senior pastors tell me, Jonathan, 90% of your ideas are junk. But 10% is genius. What if we just had a wall and we're like, okay, maybe not that, and maybe not that. Like, what is cantaloupe night? Who needs that? But like, oh, but there's 10% genius. There has to be more for us as a community, as pathways. What would it look like if we were the kind of church where our interactions were so inclusive and so interdimensional that it was obvious that God welcomed all from all walks of life? What if? Would you dream? Would you let us know? Don't sit there and be passive. There's a student leadership team, and the first line we told the student leadership team was, you are no longer students, you are now owners of the youth group. You are now creators of this youth group. You are now in charge of making things happen. And so, I now make you owners of pathways. It is what you will make it. It will only go as far as you take it. It will only dream as far as you dream. And there has to be more for why God put us here. There has to be more for why God put us together. There has to be something about the fall and the returning that can be more than just not wearing masks. Let's dream. I do not want this warning to be applied to me, to be applied to us, that we measured with whom we shared the light. Let us get away from that measurement. Let us let it shine free. And I feel like saying all these cheesy sayings about light and shining and coming forth, and it's true. Let's dream. Pray with me. Ideas are one thing, God. It seems the limited resource is our will. And we find all sorts of ways, God, to shortcut the things you give to us. I complain about my time, and I just don't have the time because I have set my life in a certain pattern, and I don't want to change the pattern because it's too hard. And there are so many claims upon my life, upon my time, upon my energy, upon my bandwidth. And it's too hard to change those things, God. And really, I'm going to be the only one. It's never going to make a difference anyway. And, you know, it's someone else's job. And I can feel you pulling out that measuring stick. And it scares me. I want all your blessings for me, for us. I want all of your hopes to be true among us. I want all of your dreams to come to fruition. I want you to be up there bragging to all of your heavenly hosts, look at that church doing it right. Look at that church struggling so hard to be. Look at that church just loving on people. I'm going to give them stuff. I'm going to give them all the joys of spiritual rewards. I'm going to give them all the fulfillment of purpose and intention and satisfaction and joy in knowing that they are following me with every ounce of their being and soul. God, I want that to be said of us. I want your name to be great. I want these seats to be full of those who are questioning and doubting and challenging you. I want there to be tension and friction among us that we can find you in the midst of that messiness and say, we celebrate and worship you. We thank you for all the blessings you give to us, God. Would you help them use it to worship you? We want to worship you. Would you shine through us and not let our hesitations, not let our weaknesses, not let our faults hold us back? We ask your forgiveness for all those things. We welcome you because you welcomed us, and help us to welcome the other. And all the people of God said, amen.